This episode of the Thai Capital Millionaire Podcast was brought to you by Black America, Inc., a $1 trillion nation, by A.R. Morton. Black America, Inc. is a piece of literature that details and illustrates the socioeconomic solutions that Black Americans can implement in their communities today. Whether it be being captains of our own industries, creating our own political parties, or just learning how to strengthen our overall health and wealth, Black America, Inc. is what Black Americans and Americans in general need to get to the next level in 2017 and beyond. For too many years, we have been talking about the problems and not the solutions. For too many years, we have been pointing fingers at each other without talking about the solutions. This is why Black America, Inc. is important. If you're ready to build yourself up and rebuild your community, head on over to Amazon.com and order your copy of Black America, Inc., a $1 trillion nation.
My name is Andre C. Hatchett, a.k.a. Mr. Own or Be Owned, and I'm encouraging everybody listening to this podcast to pick up my new book, Own or Be Owned, The Black Man's Guide to Wealth Creation in America, on Amazon.com. If you're a black man, if you need guidance, inspiration, a path to follow to build wealth in this country, pick it up. Own or Be Owned, The Black Man's Guide to Wealth Creation in America.
Welcome to the Thai Capital Millionaire Podcast with your host, Charles Oglesby III, a.k.a. Todd Millionaire.
So this is the Thai Capital Millionaire Podcast. This is episode number 55. My name is Charles Oglesby, also known as Todd Millionaire. I'm the founder and the director of the Thai Capital Investment Club. Last time I checked, we had 191 members. People are joining the club every single day. Your friends and families are joining. You should definitely be a part of what we're doing. We're allowing our members to step into massive investments at scale, seeing significant returns, tapping into that power of masterminding, and just doing some really cool things with the investment club. Another great kind of announcement with the investment club is we literally just sent off the documents today to close on property two. So we should be the owners tomorrow. So just got to follow up with the title company and see how that goes. And so then we're heading into property number three. Like I told everybody, the goal this year is one property per month. We're in February, we have two. So we need another one for March. And we're just building, man. We're growing. And with that, we're getting in touch with a lot of really, really great people who are in the game, who want to share their stories and share what they're doing, in case you want to get involved. As always, thank you for tuning in. The purpose of this show is to share the stories of successful African-American investors and business owners so that people can hear the stories of successful examples and learn that business and investing are the true keys to financial success and generational wealth. Again, this is episode number 55. Today we have Mr. Jimmy Williams. Just to give you some information about Jimmy, Jimmy has worked in real estate valuation for over 20 years and is also a real estate investor and licensed real estate agent in Pennsylvania with millions of dollars in transactions. He is a landlord and currently has development projects underway. His education includes a bachelor's degree in business management, as well as a master's degree in real estate property management, and is also a licensed certified Pennsylvania evaluator. He is the founder of the community organization and movement known as By the Hood, which gives the educational seminars across the country about the power of owning property in the hood. Jimmy is a two-time published author. His second work, entitled Own Your Time and Space, is a self-help real estate book that discusses the importance of ownership. So with that, Mr. Williams, welcome to the show, man.
Man, thanks for having me, man. I appreciate it.
Cool. So can you let us know? I mean, this show is primarily about business and real estate, and there's so much just in your bio that I like a lot. So I'm going to touch on each one of those.
Sure.
But can you tell us what kind of piqued your interest in real estate?
Man, that's an interesting story. And it is mentioned in my book, but I'll give you I'll make this very brief because it's kind of a long story, but I was raised in a pro-black household, right? So I was always taught that, you know, service, you have service and help your people. So when I was younger, I actually thought politics was the way to go. So I went to Lincoln University. Many people may know that's HBCU here in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. And I majored in political science. So at the time, my grandfather had a little juice. So what he helped me do was get on some political campaigns, like during my first break from college. And I worked a couple political campaigns, and what I noticed was the politicians didn't really have the juice. They couldn't make anything happen. But I'm very observant. So I noticed that the people that were really pulling the strings were the people who were paying for their campaigns. So I would just ask people, what do you do for a living? And most of these people who were, the millionaire next doors, they either made their money one of two ways. through equity in a company, the stock market, or real estate. So, you know, I'm sitting back and I'm like paying attention to this and I'm like, wow, I'm going about this the wrong way. To actually affect change, it comes through economics. And then I actually read a book that changed my life, which was Powernomics by Dr. Claude Anderson. So after I read that book, I had a complete paradigm shift. I said, hold on. The way to actually help people is, you know, to get the capital and then you get into the politics and so on and so forth. And for those who haven't read that book, maybe you should read that book, Powernomics. It actually breaks it down. So that's kind of what piqued my interest in real estate. So this is my first year in college. So I literally stopped going to Lincoln after 1 year. And I continued to get my degree, but I actually went part-time and then worked part-time at the lowest position possible in a real estate company. Came back home to Philadelphia. I was going to Temple Real Estate Institute, but also working as a clerk. Literally a clerk, I would file paperwork, but I wanted to be around people who worked in the real estate industry. So I was a teenager at the time, and I was, you know, filing papers and learning about real estate deals, how they're put together. Learning about commercial real estate, learning about assessing real estate, appraising real estate. So real estate at this point is literally my life. I sleep and breathe real estate, right? And it's been that way for about 20 years at this point. And that's kind of how, to make a long story short, that's kind of how it happened. It happened through me trying to understand how politics work. And what I found out was the guy, and I mean, you know, this is on a local level that I noticed this. But I mean, it works the same way whether you're talking about, you know, the state level, federal level. The guys mm-hmm. who actually pull the strings are the ones who have the coin.
The dough. I think that what I heard there is really cool. A lot of things you said are cool, and I'll touch on each one. The first is that you got to get around what you want to become. And mm-hmm. so you don't necessarily have to come in at a high level. You just got to get your foot in the door. And so I think that's so key, because then you learn the lingo, you make the connections, you see how things work, you get involved in different things. And I think it's a Jim Rohn principle. He made a mention of that, like, you got to get around where you want to be, even if you're not getting paid what you want to get paid, because that exposure is invaluable. What you're going to walk absolutely. Into is invaluable. So that was a super cool point that I heard in there. The next thing is that you see what you think is money, or you see what you think is power, and then you learn what is real power. And for me, like, I've kind of noticed that just with money, like, you see what you think is money, mm-hmm. and then you see what's real money. And I guess the story for me is I was working at this law firm where the managing partner was like super big baller, had the Ferrari, had the super nice Benz, had the super nice office. But the office that I work for now is actually the guy that finances that entire operation. And he doesn't look like money, but he has money. He's the millionaire next door.
I learned that lesson as well. One of my earliest jobs in real estate, I was working as an agent for a company called Mesa Realty, which is in the Germantown section of Philadelphia. I was doing floor time, as agents would do. And, you know, you sit around and you see people come in. And I would have guys come in a Mercedes, three-piece suit, the whole nine. And I would spend hours showing them different properties and then come to find out they didn't have any money. And the broker at the time told me, she was saying, listen, you have to, you know, pre-qualify people before you waste your time, because mm-hmm. your time is valuable. But, you know, at the time I was judging the book by its cover, I was fairly young. And I would see guys who come in and pick up trucks with dents in them, with jeans on, and they would have, you know, a $2 million cash in their account. You know what I mean? So it was an early lesson I got in judging the book by its cover and really understanding that the millionaire next door is a real thing. That's a real thing.
And I guess the point of the show is really to inspire. We've gotten a lot of great feedback from the show, but one thing I really harp on is, like, all those people out there who think that you have to have the newest, the latest, the name brands, all that stuff, we're really shooting ourselves in the foot. It's like, if you're aiming for wealth, but you look like wealth, it's going to be hard to attain wealth. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be hard to come up with that property down payment. It's going to be hard to come up with that money to partner on a deal. So it's like, instead of, like, showing it, have it, and just get back to work.
You know, one of the things I learned through the real estate business is that people who don't have any money want you to think they do. And the people that have real money, they don't want you to know they have money. Yeah. And that's for several reasons, for security and also from a tax standpoint. So, and I learned that through real estate. The people that have the real money, they don't want you to know they have any money.
Yep. Because audits are a real thing, man. You have a book, and then you also have the Buy the Hood movement.
Yeah.
And I think those are kind of similar. So can you tell us about Buy the Hood?
Okay, well, Buy the Hood, and it's a website, buythehood.com, which is pretty much, we started as a newsletter where we would give information about real estate, how to buy within the inner city and things of that nature. And it actually spawned from that. We started doing presentations in the inner city and in different communities. And then from that, we wrote a book. I have a co-author, me and myself, my brother Corey Kent, wrote a book called Own Your Time and Space. And that allowed us to, you know, give lots of presentations, speak at universities, talk all over the world. And the concept behind that was I'm a firm believer in buying in the quote unquote hood in the inner city because I understand the power of ownership. So I wanted to teach that to others because a lot of times I see people who don't understand the property that they're sitting on and the value of the property. Because I know in our local market in Philadelphia, a lot of what we call the hood, these properties will hold value because of their proximity to the central business district, which is Center City. And many people are moving back into the city, right? So one of the things I do is I study big data as it pertains to real estate. So I see trends like, you know, a lot of times years before a lot of people see. So, you know, this whole thing of gentrification, like, you know, I saw this happening years ago within the inner city. So I wanted to like make sure that our people were aware of what's going on and to own these properties because they're still to this day, right now, their neighborhoods where the properties are so undervalued. And I can tell you that 5 to 10 years from now, you won't be able to afford them when you can buy them right now, like literally right now. So I wanted to make it my business because to teach others because I'm not greedy and also I'm not looking to buy everything personally. And I'll probably explain a little bit of that later, but you know, I wanted to teach people the power of ownership.
So what are some principles that you discuss in that book, Own Your Space and Time?
Yeah, okay, well, Own Your Time and Space, the first part of the book written by, this actually happened, a friend of mine, like who's a co-author, Corey Kim, we would sit down, we would, you know, just build. And he had this theory about how, you know, time is the most important thing in the world. And I agree with him. I said, but you know, also owning space is important. So we had these debates back and forth. We had these long, hour-long debates. And we said, well, you know what? Let's put the pen to paper. You write your part about time. I write my part about space. So a lot of what we talk about in the book is about why space will always have value. A lot of times when I do a speak at a live event, the first thing I do when I start is I ask anybody who lives somewhere, right? And obviously everybody raises their hand. That right there is very simple, but that's the reason why space will always have value. Also, when you study history and you see how space or real estate was used as a tool of oppression, I believe that now it can be used as a tool of empowerment because like, literally we weren't allowed to participate in the system years ago. That kind of is what, you know, made the racial wealth gap what it is. It's pretty much because of property ownership. So when you study these things and you look at the data over time, you recognize that space will always have value. There's certain things that are inherent in space that aren't in any other asset class. So even if you run a Fortune 500 company, where are you going to run that company from? What do you need? You need a place to put your company. So for me, these are some of the things that are talked about in the book, but it's really about why space always has value and a different way to kind of look at space. So when you think about real estate or land, many people just use the cliche like, they're not making any more, so I'm going to buy it, which is true, but it's a lot deeper than that.
And so if people are looking to buy that book, where can they find that?
You can actually go to ownyourtimeandspace.com or you can go right to Amazon. That's available on Kindle as well as paperback.
It's so funny that you talk about the economic empowerment of owning your space because there's a big debate going on right now about renting versus owning. Mm-hmm. And there's so many people that say, don't ever buy a home, rent, rent, rent. What do you think about that argument?
Listen, there's not really a one-size-fits-all approach. Some people have broken down mathematically why it makes sense to rent. But to me, that only applies in certain situations. Like for me, I think that ownership is important because it's deeper than just numbers from a tax standpoint. Now we know that, you know, tax laws are changing. You can literally become your own bank through real estate if you understand how to play the game. That you can't do with renting. Because here's what I tell people all the time. I say everybody pays a mortgage, right? It's just that some people aren't paying their own mortgage. They're paying somebody else's mortgage. But everybody's paying a mortgage, whether you like it or not.
And not only that, they're also paying the property taxes. They're paying the maintenance. They're paying the upkeep. And so it's like they think they're getting over by paying rent, but you're paying for all that stuff.
Now, here's what I will say. If you can, like, you know, say buy an apartment building and then rent to yourself, that's different, right? So I know people who have taken that approach. You know, I'll buy the building under an LLC and then rent to myself. That's a whole different strategy there. But, you know, maybe that way renting makes sense. But to me, ownership is important. Yeah. Ownership is very important because you can literally leverage your house to become your own bank.
Yeah. I think that one of the things that when I hear that argument, what kind of frustrates me is that in a lot of ways, we don't really take our situation into consideration. And so you'll make this blanket. You'll hear Grant Cardone say, rent, rent, rent. And that might make sense for people who look like him. But for people who look like us, It's own time, man. Like, we can't afford to let the money that we have, the resources that we have, give that to somebody else.
When you study the racial wealth gap, literally, it's made through the ownership of property. And because we weren't able to buy property or have properties financed, even as recent as the 50s or 60s, we couldn't get financing. We missed out on that. There were people who fought in the war who came home and weren't able to use their VA loans because they were African-American. Meanwhile, you know, they were allowed to use their VA loans, and those properties have quadrupled in 10 times. So it's like we're behind because we weren't able to own. We literally just weren't able to. Legally, we couldn't.
Which means we weren't able to leave anything as inheritance.
Exactly.
So
then that thing, it compounds over time like anything else. Yeah. But the fact is, like I told you earlier, when I found out about how politics really work, there's really only two ways. And I study wealthy people. I read books on a daily basis. There's only two ways people have become wealthy, is real estate and equity and businesses, right? Business. So whether it's the stock market or, you know, you have your own business, it's equity in that business and real estate. That's pretty much it.
What did your very first real estate transaction look like?
Wow, man, my very first real estate transaction. Now, are you talking about from an ownership standpoint? Because actually, before I purchased my first investment, I had already sold a couple of properties. So I had been through the process of teaching someone to buy. So the first one that I would say was an investment is I kind of house hacked, but not really. I moved into a property, stayed for a couple of years, and I had the FHA loan. So, you know, the low down payment. Moved out of that property into another one. And that's kind of how I got the ball rolling with my investment career.
First, I want to ask you if you can define what house hacking is for the listeners. But also, I wanted to ask you if when you sold that property, if you were able to take advantage of, I think it's a 221 exemption.
Yeah, but actually, I didn't sell it. That's the thing. I didn't sell it. What I did was I moved out of it into another property, you know, after a couple of years, got another loan for that property, and I got a line of credit on that first property.
Yeah. So you became the bank.
Exactly. And that's what I recognized about you literally can become your own bank. And people don't recognize that you can do it through the property that you actually live in. Yep. That's the power of ownership. You live in a property, you know, gains equity. And I happened to start my real estate career before the bubble even, you know, went off. So it got to be a point in the mid 2000s, 2005, 2006, where I was literally, I had close to 40 properties in my portfolio personally. And I own properties in Carolina, Atlantic City, Ohio, Pennsylvania. And to be honest with you, I didn't know what I was doing. I kind of failed forward. Also, I got lucky. So a lot of times people say, well, you were smart. I really wasn't smart. I got lucky. Mm-hmm. What happened was I found myself like going through burnout. I had so many properties and I had a couple property managers, which were terrible. So I owned all these properties in various states. So actually, I started to sell them off. So it got to a point where I sold them all off except for a couple, and that's when the bubble just burst. I got lucky because I got out for a whole different reason. I didn't see what was happening. I was making so much money before the bubble burst. One thing that wasn't in my bio, I actually went to law school for a year, right? And I was in law school, but I was making so much money in real estate that I used to sit in class and just like, you know, I'm sitting there trying to figure out what's going on with these deals, and the teacher's talking to me. So I had to talk with my teacher, and he was like, well, you know, you can invest money into this education here, but if you're not going to use it and you already found what your passion is or what you want to do, he said, I would suggest you leave. And I did exactly that. Yeah. Because I was killing in the real estate game, but I actually got out of all those properties, right? And what's interesting about that is I was talking to one of my partners this week. My portfolio right now, we have about 8 or 9 doors, and we have a couple under contract right now. I'm actually making more money with less property. And the reason being is when I had all those properties, I was leveraged so much that my cash flow was a lot smaller. Now what I recognize is, and I kind of mentioned earlier about the whole thing of buy the hood, teaching people to buy the properties. Back then, I would buy any deal that I could buy. Now I'm more strategic about it. So one of the things I would like to leave listeners is it's not about just buying, it's about being strategic. Because I didn't have a strategy back then. Back then is, oh, I can buy it, let's buy it. I want to buy as much property as I can, regardless of how I finance it or how I get it. Let me just grab as much as possible. So now out of the properties I own, I rarely have any mortgages on them. So now, you know, I take a regular property in Philadelphia, a single family home, 3-bedroom, 1-bathroom, that I can rent out for $1,000 a month and have no mortgage with it. Before, if I had a property like that, I may have a mortgage of, you know, $600, $700. So it's a big difference. So I have less property, but I'm actually making more cash flow. It's about being strategic, not necessarily just having a lot of properties. And the reason I say that is because I'm able to jump on deals. I bought a property for $3,000 that's worth about $80. Now, the fact is, stuff like that doesn't happen all the time. But when I buy a property now, I know that I'm buying at a supreme discount. I'm sort of like a value investor when it comes to real estate. And as I mentioned earlier, I study wealthy people. So one of the things I actually studied as I was going through that process of learning how to buy as opposed to just buying everything is if you ever study Berkshire Hathaway, 38% of their worth is in cash. And the reason they keep so much cash is because when the market goes down or something happens, they're able to jump in and pretty much buy at a discount. So I took that same approach as I started to build the portfolio back. I said, well, I don't have to jump on everything. There's nothing wrong with saving and building cash. So then when I find a great deal, I can jump in and pay cash. And again, continue to be my own bank. So that's the one thing I would say about in terms of my personal portfolio. I actually own less property than I once did, but I actually make more money.
Would you consider those hood properties? What would you consider those properties?
Absolutely. Like, so if anyone knows Philadelphia, most of them are in the Allegheny West section, a Strawberry Mansion, parts of North Philly. I have a 4-unit in Germantown and a single family in Alney. So most of those will be the quote unquote hood. I have one property in the middle class neighborhood, but most of them will be considered the hood. Yes.
I'm not sure if you would agree with this statement, but I think that one of the great things about what you're doing now and what we're doing, because we're buying most of our properties in the hood as well, is like you said, the cash on cash returns are just ridiculous. So you can own less and make more. And then it costs you less to get in there. But I feel like in certain ways, it's different because a lot of people on the bigger pockets investors who only invest in middle class areas, they're not going to go into the ghetto. And so we're literally sitting on an opportunity that nobody else has access to.
Exactly.
All we have to do is walk into it.
But to be honest with you, that's why your show is important, right? Because I follow everything. So I listen to Bigger Pockets. I watch Bigger Pockets. But a lot of those people that talk, they don't look like us and they don't understand our experiences or even culture, to be exact, right? So they have these things about buying in the hood and they would tell you these reasons why. If you conduct yourself, like if you know how to move, then you don't really have those issues that a lot of people have. You know what I mean? We could tell when someone's BSing us. I still do a credit check like I do with everybody else. I have properties on Section 8, those that aren't. But the thing about it is that the returns are there. There's always going to be an opportunity there. Like there are neighborhoods, like I told you right now, that are still undervalued, where I can go spend $30,000 on a property and get $10 to $1,200 in rent. Where else can I do that? Right. So and that's another thing. When I had all those properties before, I was buying in B-class neighborhoods and I would be getting like $1,100 of rent. But between taxes, mortgage and insurance, I'm paying $1,000. So I could point to and say, hey, look, that's my building. I'm making $100 a month. It's not even worth it. I could just go buy a REIT.
The idea of, because when you start putting debt on the property, the bank ends up making more on your property than you make on the property, or the property manager makes just as much money as you're making on your property.
And don't get me wrong, I'm not against debt. I know some people are like, oh, I'll never get debt. Now, if you know how to use it, right? I'm all about arbitrage. If I can pull money out at 5% and I can make 20%, I'll do that all day long.
So how did you acquire the units that you have now?
A lot of what I do is I do a lot of canvassing. So I tell people so I do a lot of teaching. So when I teach, I tell people, listen, what I personally do, and there's a lot of strategies to buying real estate. That's the thing. People say, I flip or I do this. I've kind of done all those things, right? So one of the things is I'm still active as an agent, but not really. Most of my clients are other investors or like a referral from a family or friend. But I don't actively go out looking for new home buyers or anything like that. I don't do that. So most of my clients are investors. So I have a network of investors that, throw deals my way. But also, it's also strategic in why I keep my license. A lot of people say, why would you still keep your license? Well, access to information, the multiple listing service. But also, I come across so many deals. And like I said, I'm picky about my deals now. So instead of trying to buy everything, I may put one on the market and just get a couple grand because I don't want to buy the property, but I see its value there. So because I can't buy the way I want to buy it. So I keep my license to put on the market. So it's basically from word of mouth and networking at this point. But what I do is I focus on specific areas and I send out letters. I do the community events. So by becoming known as someone who's in the industry, I get calls almost on a daily basis about properties because I live the life. So a lot of times people are starting, I tell them even if you have no properties, go get yourself a business card that says real estate investor. You have to act as if you're a real estate investor. You mentioned earlier, you have to learn the lingo, you have to talk the talk. So when you start to do that and learn specific neighborhoods, in terms of being strategic, I focus on certain neighborhoods. So people in those neighborhoods know me. So sometimes the property that I got for a couple grand, it was literally a call. Hey, such and such died. Their family just wants to get rid of this property. They want nothing at all to do with it. And I says, okay, and tell them I'll give them this. Another thing is about getting started in this business. You can't be scared of people telling you no. I offer people sometimes stuff for their properties, and they're like, how do you have the nerve to do that? Well, first of all, I'm not afraid what they're going to say. Are they going to say no? And also, I learned this earlier. I had a mentor. He told me, he says, when you make an offer on a property, if you're not somewhat embarrassed by it, then you probably offer too much. So I've offered, like, I've literally bought properties for nothing. I have a couple properties right now under contract where I'm not paying anything for them.
Wow.
People are behind on, you know, taxes, water, mortgage, whatever it may be. Hey, I'll assume that for you. Can't give you anything, but I'll get that headache out your way. And I've done that several times. Bought property subject to, you know, so I'm not afraid to just make an offer, which sounds crazy to most, but you'll be surprised at how many things you can get. So now if I'm getting a property for $0 out of my pocket, and then I'll go and negotiate all those bills.
Are you only buying off-market deals, or do you also buy deals that are listed?
I haven't bought anything listed in a while. I did that in the past. But like I said, when I made the shift in terms of my business, now I try to find off-market deals because I get better deals. Like a lot of people in the Philadelphia area go to the sheriff's sale. What I'll do is, and this is I shouldn't even be telling this, but a lot of times I'll get a list of things that are going up for sheriff's sale, and I'll try to get in touch with them before it goes. Hey, listen, your property's getting ready to go to sheriff's sale. You're going to lose it. How about I give you $500 for it? You sign over to me right now. Listen, I'm telling you, last year, I think I bought 3 properties for like a total of $5,000. 3. Like, yep. I mean, I'm paying less for properties than some people pay for, like, you know, their belt, their jeans.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, these things are out here.
I think one of the cool things about, and this is why I keep hammering into my team that we have to find off-market deals, is when you find something off-market, everything opens up to you. Mm-hmm. So it's like either you can buy it, you can sell it, you can sell it to a wholesaler. There's so many options, but if you just only get something that's listed by a broker, you only have one option. That's to buy it.
And that's the absolute truth. Because like I said, I don't buy everything, but I've been feeding myself through real estate for 2 decades at this point. And I make a good living through real estate. And the fact is, I don't buy everything. So a lot of times people say, well, I thought maybe you would have 100 rentals. I don't have to, because some things just don't fit into my long-term financial goals, right? So if I look at a property, I want to know that I can own this property and sit on it for the rest of my life. I'm real strategic in terms of buy and hold. And also, I think it was Aisha who was on your podcast who said, real estate isn't life, investing is life, right? And that's the quote that I heard her say on your podcast. But that's so true, because I'm also heavy in the stock market. So for me, the way I use real estate is pretty much, so all my investment properties, here's another thing that I'll tell you, is I have never taken any of the rent or anything from an investment property for my living. I invest everything back into the business, whether it's just building up a pile of cash to move on another deal, or, you know, sitting in the stock market. So I actually use my formulas, my pro forma for my properties. I charge a 10% property management fee, although I self-manage, right? And the reason I do that is because if I ever get to the point where I want to get a property manager, I'm already used to charging that 10% fee. But what I do with the fee now is I put that fee into the market, into the stock market. Essentially, my biggest thing, to be completely honest with you, I love dividend stocks. I only buy dividend stocks. I want to invest in companies that pay me. The way I look at finance, and again, it's all about being your own bank. I look at real estate as a way to, sit off cash flow. And that's why I buy strategically, to get lots of cash flow to put back into the business to buy other properties. Have the properties take care of themselves if I need to get a roof or anything like that. It's because I have a pile of cash that came from real estate. Like, again, I don't take any of the money from that.
Yeah.
And my management fee goes into the market. Right. So that's building up dividends, which is going to pay me every quarter. I get paid. Those dividends go right back into the dividend stocks. So I'm building up this huge portfolio over here of dividend stocks, which is being paid for by, you know, pretty much everything I do, whether it's a speaking engagement, whether it's a royalty from my book, whether it's from real estate. Everything is to build this huge pile of dividend stocks. And that's kind of my whole strategy right there.
So if all your real estate investment money is going in to be reinvested back into your properties, and all your property management money is going into your investment portfolio, how do you make money to live?
Now, I work as a real estate analyst too, right? So what I do with that is, again, so I take big data, and I use big data to, kind of determine what's going on in terms of property values within the city.
Yeah.
So I have a job, but the thing is, it's kind of like more of a consultant type thing. But because I've spent so much time in real estate, I kind of, have the ability to have speaking engagements and also do this analytical work to make money to live off of.
So it sounds like you're obsessed.
My life is real estate. It really is. My life is real estate. It is. But it's interesting, right? So another thing that I learned early on working in real estate is how, people say you have to have multiple streams of income. Robert Allen wrote the book. And when I became obsessed with money, I actually studied with Robert Allen, believe it or not, years ago. What I recognized is you can have multiple streams of income within real estate. That's why I've wholesaled deals over the past year. I've done flips. I do believe buy and hold is the right strategy, because when I look at the Forbes magazine, I don't see anybody who made like billions off of flipping everything. Most of the wealthy people are buy and hold, right? So I believe that's the thing. But what I do when I flip property is I flip property to get huge lump sums to put into, you know, my war chest or my dividend stocks, one or the other, or both.
That's dope.
You know what I mean? So, but real estate essentially is my life. Mm-hmm. So, that's how I pretty much, feed myself is through real estate. It's a different stream of real estate. I literally have multiple streams of real estate income, whether it's flipping, wholesaling, rental income, or the analyst work that I do within real estate.
This is Ken Morris, the CEO and founder of Multibex, the private equity investment firm, and the creator of the brand Lord of My Land, the Alpha Gentleman Entrepreneur. And I am a proud supporter of Tide Capital. You can find me on Instagram at Lord of My Land and at The Lord Ken.
This is Charles Oglesby, also known as Todd Millionaire, host of the Millionaire Podcast, and I'm the founder and the director of the Tide Capital Investment Club that now has over 200 members. Tide Acquisitions, which is our crowdfunded real estate firm, and Tide Ventures, our crowdfunded venture capital firm. I am formally inviting you to join one of our many investment clubs. If you are someone who is new to investing, a seasoned investor, or someone who doesn't even know what investing is, we know that you will learn the key to investing and how to build generational wealth through the use of crowdfunding by working with our team. Email info@capitaltide.com to join today.
It's so crazy, because I was talking to my wife and I was telling her, like, the more properties we get, the more property management income we get. Mm-hmm. So it's like, yeah, you get the rental income. Yeah, you get the appreciation, but every property is an extra check for that property management expense, which is crazy.
One of the brokers I worked for early on, she literally had multiple six-figure businesses under one real estate business. She was a broker, and, you know, so she got a piece of all of us agents. And she sold her own properties. She had a property management business that would bring her six figures just by managing units that she didn't even own. Then she owned her own units. And she was flipping properties at the same time. So she had like literally four different six-figure streams all within real estate. And that's when I recognized, like, wow, there's so many ways to, you can literally have multiple streams just within real estate. Like you just said, you start to pick up how to manage properties, which these days, if you know how to leverage technology, is not as difficult as it once was. You can start to manage other people's properties. Hey, yeah, give me 10%, I'll manage your property every month for you. Yep. And now you have a whole nother stream coming in.
I was talking to one of the guys in my office today, and he was talking about how, like, you have to be in the real estate business. And so, like, a part of that real estate business is, yeah, we wholesale. Yeah, we rehab. Yeah, we have a construction company. Yeah, we can sell deals. Yeah, we can manage deals. Yeah, we can flip deals. And so it's all under that same brother. But yes, what I like about your story is it kind of reminds me of Don Peoples, because Don Peoples got his start because he was an appraiser. And mm-hmm. So he knew all the valuations. So he knew when he found a deal, it was a deal. He's not guessing. He's not leaning on a wholesaler telling it's a deal. So.
Exactly what I do. And Don Peoples is one of my mentors, even though he doesn't know it.
Me too.
I've read his bio and studied it. Like, you know, so I'm familiar with his story. And you're absolutely right, because that's what I do. So because I look at data all day, there are certain things that I recognize that a lot of people don't. So I know when I'm paying for a property, what to pay for. To give you a quick example, I was looking at a property last year, and, you know, was talking with someone, another investor, and they were like so caught on this property because of the fact that it had a garage. But what I know, because I look at data all day long, is that in Philadelphia, depending upon where you are, a garage can actually add no value to your property. Right. So in certain neighborhoods, it adds a ton of value. In certain neighborhoods, it adds no value at all. But because I'm looking at data all day long, and I just don't look at, like, you know, a lot of times they tell you, pull your three comps. I'm looking at comps over a 10-year period and looking at the trend lines and what matters and what doesn't matter. So because of these things, when I go to look at a property, which is why I always tell people valuation is my specialty. So because of that, I'm good at the numbers. Like, I'm terrible with my hands. I can't use a hammer and nails, but I can look at data and statistics and tell you what a property's worth.
How can investors find deals in today's market?
Okay, so what I would say is get out there and network. Also, I've literally walked blocks, knocked on doors, and talked to people. But the main thing I would say is become an investor, live the life of an investor, be an investor. It's amazing how much easier it is to get information now versus when I started years ago as a teenager. Now I can go on my phone and look at Meetup and go to a local Meetup. I can go on Eventbrite in Philadelphia. There's always different real estate events going on. And I see this in other cities too. Just go on Eventbrite, your local investment association. So you have to get in the mix. And what I tell people to do is specialize in your specific area. One of the things I didn't do before when I was buying everything is I was buying in markets where I really didn't even know the market, but I know I can buy the property. It's funny because I hear a lot of older people, grandparents and great grandparents, who would tell me stories as a kid about the Depression. And, you know, I see it on TV, but I didn't recognize what it really was. And I think that's how this whole real estate boom is going to be in years to come, because I lived through the boom. So I know just how crazy it was. And when the bubble burst, it was extremely crazy. But coming out of that, you know, everything is kind of recovered, and certain markets didn't even really take a hit as much as many people think. What's interesting is getting in the business and just like being in the business will help you find deals. So I like off-market deals. From talking to other people, there's certain areas where you can still do on-market deals, which are good. I know in Philadelphia, that's like few and far between, because, you know, there's a lot of people, you know, looking for properties in this area. But if you specialize in areas, which I didn't do before the bus, I just bought anything. But now, if you specialize in areas and, you know, start to collect your own data, I tell people you can get an Excel spreadsheet, go to specific areas that you want to focus on, and start to look at what stuff sells for. These are things that you can do without even purchasing your first property or having any money. Just start to look at whatever area you think you want to focus on and start to follow the trends. So see what's selling, what's it selling for, what's not selling, what's sitting on the market for longer, what price point are things selling for faster, and you start to become a specialist. So then when you go to your events and you start to talk, you talk the jargon and you know what you're talking about. And that'll give you a certain level of comfort to pretty much make offers and do deals. Yeah. But you have to do something. That's my biggest thing I can leave you with, is do something.
Yeah. One thing that I realized is that, I mean, going to meetups is a hack in multiple ways. But that first meetup, you might be nervous. The second meetup, you know people there. You're more comfortable. You're sharing more. They're sharing more with you. And then you just become one of the family. Yep. And what's really cool is that it also kind of provides that accountability factor. So it's like, if you don't own real estate and you're hanging out with a bunch of people who own real estate, you're going to get you some real estate. You're going to find some deals.
You'll find a way. You'll find a way. And you may have something that can help them, right? You know what I mean? So when I first started out, like I said, I started at the very bottom, but I started just to be around people who were doing deals.
And another thing that it kind of does is it shows you that the people who are doing it aren't any smarter than you.
Exactly. That's a great point, because a lot of times, like before you get in the business, you get intimidated. Like, wow, they must be smart. They must know something. I know some people who are extremely intelligent and broke, and I know some people who aren't that intelligent or wealthy. Like, you know, you could be far from a Harvard student as long as you got the ball to do it.
Absolutely. I think Nita said on this show, she was saying like a lot of the skills that are required to be great at real estate investing are already innate within us. Mm-hmm. So it's like a lot of people who think they don't have the ability. It's like Jay Morrison says, it's like, are you a hustler or are you a drug dealer? Because a hustler can sell anything. So it's like, if you are a grinder, you're somebody who can make the most out of anything. You put that into some grimy property and you could turn that into diamonds as well.
Absolutely.
So what are some things that you did early on in your career to make you successful?
It kind of changed my circle, but it's one of those things where it happened organically. When you start to want to make moves and do certain things, your circle changes. One of the things I did, which was kind of a hack in itself, is I said, all right, well, you know, I went to law school. I says, and I was making so much money that I stopped going. I said, but, you know, I love school. So let me figure this out. Let me go to real estate school, which is how I ended up getting a master's degree in property management. So I went to Drexel in Philadelphia, took up real estate. So what that did was it put me around professors who were in the business, students who were in the business, because the one thing about like a master's program, which is different than a grad program, you have a lot of working people, right? So that was kind of a hack in itself. So my circle changed, because now I'm talking real estate all day long. When I'm working, I'm talking real estate. If I'm studying in school, we're talking real estate. Yep. We're talking about deals, how things are done. So my circle organically changed, because now I'm around people who are trying to do some of the same things I am. And, you know, so we're reading the same books. You kind of got it, get engrossed in the business and learn it. So that was one of the things that I did. And now, again, about how easier things are, what I find is my social media contacts are people who are in business, right? So even if I'm spending my time talking online, I'm talking with other people who are in real estate, who are in business, who are trying to make moves.
Yep.
So to me, that's one of the greatest things, because it's like you just said, that accountability factor. Okay, well, such and such is closed deal. I need to do a deal too.
How did you fund your earlier deals?
All right. Well, the first deal I got, I had sold a couple properties and I pretty much banked that money, got an FHA loan to buy my first property.
And so was that first property a single family house or a multi-family
family house? Single family house, which I still own to this day. Stacked some paper, moved out of that one into another property. But what I did was I got a line of credit on the first property and used that line of credit to do other deals. Mm-hmm. So that was what I was talking about in terms of becoming your own bank. And now what I do is I try to get a line of credit on all my properties. You know, even though I have my own money that I sit aside because I don't spend any rental money, I still get lines of credit even if I don't use them. Mm-hmm. Because pretty much I'm my own bank. So if something does come my way, I can either, you know, if I want to use that money, I can use that money. If not, I'll just, you know, so it just gives me options.
Have you found that banks are still okay to lend on properties in the hood, even if they're debt free?
Well, see, that's the thing. So I've never, like, I shouldn't say never, but for the most part, I don't go pull out the money. I'll get a line of credit. Mm-hmm. And I use credit unions. But the thing is, certain credit unions have certain rules. So I know that, just to give you an example, in Philadelphia, there's a Philadelphia Federal Credit Union. They won't loan below a certain amount. But then there's another credit union called American Heritage who will loan, you know, and here's what they won't tell you. They'll tell you on their papers that $50,000 is their minimum, but it's really $30,000 if you actually talk to someone. So again, I'm not afraid to ask questions. So I'll ask them, like, you know, say $50,000, you can't do anything. Well, they, you know, a lot of times they have banks have programs that they won't even advertise a lot of times. It's just a matter of you asking.
Are you able to kind of put that debt on multiple properties? So if you had to kind of combine properties to...
You get a blanket mortgage. Yeah, that's one way to do it. So, and a lot of times I don't even use them. I have the line of credit sitting there, but like I like to have it open in order to make moves. So that's kind of how I pretty much fund the deals.
Yeah. So it's like you have it just kind of like that Warren Buffett method, yeah, just in case something pops up.
Absolutely. And that's what I'm saying. So that's one of the things I learned, like, you know, through trial and error, is it's nothing wrong with, because I used to feel like if I had money just sitting, like I was doing myself a disservice because it's not out working for me. So kind of like, I'd be like literally be arguing myself, like, I gotta get out there working, because if it's sitting in a bank, I'm losing money. But what I recognize is it's also good to have a war chest.
Are you working with any partners these days?
Yeah, I have one partner. Well, actually, I have two partners. I own a property with another gentleman as well. But I don't have any sort of groups. I actually looked into starting an investment group, but what happened was it actually, and I know you can relate to this, it became like a job trying to put it together, right? And, you know, when you're working with the group, it's just like on a group project in school, one person ends up doing all the work. So yeah. I kind of got, like, you know, burned out with that because I had so many other things going on. So I do have like just a couple partners that I use. So I have own a property with another guy who's an agent in my office or whatever. We own a property together. Then I have another partner that I own most of my properties with. And I do have a couple by myself as well. So I have some of myself as well.
What are you aiming for? What's the grand scheme? What's the end goal?
You know, that's a great question, because that kind of changes over time. So at one point I wanted to have 100 doors until I recognized that it's about the cash flow, not necessarily the amount of doors. So then it changed. The biggest satisfaction I get now is seeing other people that I've helped come back and, you know, and I see them do it big. So now that's kind of like where I'm at, kind of like falling into this mentor role. But I had an epiphany this past year, right? So I told you I love dividend stock. I was literally this past year, I went on a couple of vacations. I was in Jamaica at one point. And as I was sitting on the beach in Jamaica, I had my smartphone on me and I saw that, hey, rent was paid. This was like on June 1st. I remember the day, it was June 1st. And I'm like, you know, I had a couple rent checks that hit my phone. And then, you know, I got like the Coca-Cola dividend stock. It was a couple of my stocks actually paid dividends. And I'm sitting there on the beach like, maybe this is what my next goal is. I just want to go to a beach and just have checks come. You know what I mean? Like, so then I went on another vacation, literally snorkeling in Belize. Now it sounds crazy. I'm snorkeling in Belize. I get back to the boat and I'm looking and it's like, I got rent checks. So then I tell my wife, I was like, you know what? I think my life has just changed. I think that I want to retire to some island and just get passive income. You know what I mean? So that's when it kind of hit me. Like, it took me all this time to realize, like, this is amazing, because it's not just the real estate checks. Like, you get dividend checks too. And the more you own, the bigger the dividends get. I'm like, it's amazing getting multiple checks while I'm like, you know, I'm not even in the country.
How can somebody successfully invest in real estate in the hood?
Okay. For one, I would say do your homework, because again, just because a deal looks good doesn't mean it's good. So understand the market you're going in, understand what the rents are. So I would say know your numbers. You know your numbers. I tell all people all the time, know your numbers and know your neighborhood. Because I just had a post on Instagram today. A lot of people in Philadelphia, you know, I'm kind of related to. There's a hot neighborhood in Philadelphia called Brewerytown. It's been hot for a while. What I'm noticing is people are trying to stretch those boundaries of what's actually Brewerytown now. So I'm looking at property this past weekend and someone said, hey, this is a hot property in Brewerytown. I'm like, this is nowhere near Brewerytown. What are you talking about? But the fact is I know the local market. So I know when someone's BSing me. So I know what the rents are. So what I would say to someone now is know your numbers, know what the rents are, do your homework, know your numbers in terms of valuation, which you should pay, and also be disciplined. Be disciplined. So when they sell you those timeshares, you go and say, I'm not buying anything, and then you leave and you actually bought something. Same thing happens in real estate auctions. I see people go on real estate auctions and they get in bidding wars over properties that they know it's not worth that, but they're going back and forth with someone and emotion takes over. And you pay market price at the auction, which you even go to auction for.
Exactly. That is true. You definitely have to be disciplined. I think that's one of the downsides of our property every month goal is then you put yourself on a timeline. I mean, you put yourself on a timeline. Yeah. Sometimes you can squeeze deals that don't make sense into your timeline.
Yeah. But you said one a month. You have to average that. So you may go a month without getting one, but then you may go a month, you get three good ones. So it's all about, but the discipline is the key though. You don't want to go just overspending because you're trying to do one a month.
Who is someone that you look up to and why?
What I would say is stay local here in Philadelphia is Kenny Gamble. Now, many people know Kenny Gamble from Gamble and Huff. He's a big time name in music, but I saw with real estate and it was very inspiring. Like when we talked earlier about real estate being used as a tool of oppression, but he used real estate. I've seen him literally almost single-handedly gentrify certain neighborhoods and also help his people by putting the work with jobs. So he's a guy who made his name as a legend in music, but he flipped it into real estate. He owns a company called Universal Companies here in Philadelphia. But I know so many people that he employs. I also saw what he did to certain neighborhoods that people wouldn't even go into. And now there's this valuable property because he bought up a bunch of real estate, put his own people to work, put his own people in the homes. So that was very inspiring to me because like it's about the dollars and cents. A lot of people don't recognize that real estate is a lot deeper than that, which is, you know, the whole concept of ownership.
We had this election. We've been through a year of the Trump presidency. Personally, I've seen a lot of great things just from the African-American community. I've seen a lot of unity. I've seen a lot of empowerment. I've seen a lot of support. What's your take? What do you want us to do? What should we be doing to dominate these upcoming years as opposed to just laying down, I guess?
Yeah. We have to get active. And that's an interesting question because I was talking to someone last night who just told me that they think that his presidency is actually an overall good thing because it mobilized a lot of people. Because he's as blunt and arrogant as he is, it's kind of like some of his policies and things that he's done, they think that, that what they were saying is someone else would have done it, but they would have done it, you know, kind of like, you know, while kissing you so you don't recognize it's being done. But like you said, there's so many people who are mobilizing, who actually are interested in politics, becoming politically active, but also just paying attention. So I can say that there's more people paying attention now than ever before. But what I think we need to do is we need to actually be doing something. And that sounds very simple, simplistic, but I know a lot of times we sit behind keyboards or our phones and, you know, we want to be text warriors or talk our talk, but we need to get out and do. So in terms of acquiring these assets, in terms of learning about, you know, how the world actually works, even politically involved, we need to get out and do instead of just talking about it. Because one of the things I said earlier, which is true, is when you start to recognize how government and pretty much everything works, it'll blow your mind. Like you start to really understand how a bank actually works. Just a bank, just to make it simple, just how an actual bank works and why banks pretty much run the country. But what do banks actually create or do? They take my money and they give it to you. I mean, in the streets, that's called a loan shark. Like, but at the same time, they're able to control policy. They're able to control pretty much everything we do, which is why, you know, I'm on this whole kick of be your own bank.
That's a bar. And that's actually a good challenge to people because, I mean, it's one thing to say that real estate allows you to be your own bank, but equities allow you to be your own bank as well.
Yes, they do.
And so what I always tell people is like money set aside is truly like where you want to be just because, I mean, then you have access to lending on your own money, then you have access to buying assets, which then allow you to then lend your own money again. So mm-hmm. it's like if you own stocks, it's like buying assets is one of the rare instances where you buy something, you don't lose your cash. It's not like you're yeah. buying 1,000 sneakers. You're buying one property. You put your $10,000 over here and you effectively still have your $10,000, but you also have the cash flow. You also have all those different streams of income that we talked about earlier.
And that's amazing because it's not like I haven't made the mistakes that I see people make. Like I've bought brand new cars. I've done the dumb stuff, but I learned from it. Yeah. Because, you know, buying a brand new car versus using that money to buy assets. Like when you start to actually understand how stocks work, and again, if the company doesn't pay dividends, I don't buy it. I don't care if it's Google. I don't care if it's like if Facebook. If you're not giving me a dividend, I don't want to deal with you. I want you to give me cash. So for me, when you start to get actual checks from companies, it almost became to the point where, like, you know, so I've been buying Coca-Cola stock for maybe 19 years now. But almost get to the point like where it's almost like a gang war. If somebody walks in my house with a Pepsi, it's like, what are you doing? Like, because that's how serious it is. Like, I'm an owner of this company. When you start to recognize that stock ownership is literally ownership in a company, it really like changes your perspective when you actually get checks. Yeah. And that's what I tell people, right? You can get checks.
But it's a good place to be. And that's kind of where I want the culture to be, because that's a more empowering standpoint than just a consumer. It's like you're consuming Pepsi versus owning Coke, or owning Pepsi for that matter. Or
owning Pepsi, yeah, whatever you own, just own it. I mean, because we have to understand the power of ownership is amazing, because, you know, I know a lot of times like we kind of flock towards real estate because it's tangible and we can point to it, but non-tangible assets are amazing. Yep. Because when you start to understand that it's ownership in a company, it kind of changes you. But people always tell me, what if the company does this? I says, well, listen, I'm big on blue chips. So I own Apple, I own Coca-Cola, I own American Airlines. Like, if some of these companies go out of business, we're going to have a lot more trouble than my stock portfolio. That means the whole country's in trouble. There's so many pension funds and things that are investing in some of these big companies that it's kind of like, you know, I hate to say this, but some of these companies are too big to fail.
What's your favorite business book?
Man, now I'm heavy on reading. I read about a book a week, and I have done so for maybe the last 6 years. I read about 52 books a year. So I'm heavy into reading. But I will say this, and because we're talking about real estate and business, The Richest Man in Babylon. But if I had to like just give you a 1B, because I know everybody talks about Rich Dad.
Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Which is an amazing book. But to me, that's not even Kiyosaki's best work. Cashflow Quadrant is the book that kind of like changed my life. And I know I already said Poweronomics changed my life, but there's been several books that changed my life. But Cashflow Quadrant changed my life because that clicked in me when you actually can see the quadrant and understand, because there's this thing in our community, right, where we say you have to have your own business, you have to do this, that, and the third. And when he kind of broke down the difference between the E quadrant and the S quadrant, I says, wow, I know a lot of S quadrant who believe they're in the B quadrant, right? So there are a lot of people who are self-employed who like to say, I run my own business, but they can't even take 2 days off. They don't have systems. So for those who haven't read the book, it's about, you know, the four quadrants, the you know, being an employee, being self-employed, being a business owner, and being an investor. So when I read that and I kind of thought about it, I'm like, well, we're not all trying to get to that I quadrant. It doesn't matter where you sit. There's some people who actually have jobs or employees who are putting away enough, whether it be in real estate and stocks, to move straight to the I quadrant. You know what I mean? So it kind of just changed my this thought process in terms of how I see work, and also how I see investing in business ownership, specifically business ownership. Because if you have your own business but you can't go away for a week and your business doesn't crumble, like I know a lot, like I've talked to like a friend who's a dentist and he's stuck in the S quadrant. He can't go away because if he's not there to clean teeth, his business isn't making money. So sometimes he says, well, I've been better off just going to work in someone else's office. At least I get a couple of weeks vacation. You know what I mean? So it's like, that book to me was Kiyosaki's best work, in my personal opinion. I know everybody loves Rich Dad, Poor Dad, but that book right there is probably one that I would say is one of my favorites.
What advantage do you think that reading so much is giving you?
Opens up my mind. So I learn a lot through reading, but also reading can also be enjoyable, right? So you can learn a lot, but also be enjoyable. And so sometimes I don't just read business books. I read all kinds of books. But what I feel as though, like, I try to mix it up. So I like a lot of history, and you learn a lot. But also when you read things that are fiction, kind of helps the creative part of your brain. So one thing about real estate is both science and art. I actually try to get creative on my deals, believe it or not. You know, like I said, I was working on a deal today where I'm actually purchasing a duplex in Philadelphia. It's about $100,000, and I'm coming to my pocket with $0.
How are you going to make that happen? How do you make a deal with no money out of your pocket happen?
I found a guy who's retiring out of the business. So he sold off a couple properties, and he has this one left. And he said he's having a little difficulty selling it because it's a one-in-one. So it has one bedroom on the first floor, one bedroom on the second floor. He has a tenant on the first floor who's paying under market rent. She's been there for 20-plus years. So what I told him was, I says, okay, well, here's what I'll do. Let me buy it off of you, and you just hold the note. So he's becoming the bank. I'm paying him a rate. The second floor is already ready to go, so I'll rent it out. I'll have the money. I'll have enough cash flow to pay him on a monthly basis. And, you know, so he's happy that it's out of his name, so he's not responsible for taxes, insurance, upkeep, so on and so forth, because he's trying to get out of the business. Yep. I'm just going to send him a check. And what I told him I'll do is, I said, within a year or two, I'll just refi as the owner and just pay you off. So therefore, I'm literally coming out of my pocket with nothing. But that's what I'm saying. It's all about being creative.
I didn't even
and
think
you won't
of it.
Know until you ask. You won't know until you ask.
We're in the process of a property that we're looking to buy using seller finance. And we're going to pay for it over the course of 24 months. But I didn't even think about refinancing that property.
Yeah, I told him, I said, look, give me a 20-year mortgage just to give me these payments lower for me. I said, but what I promise you is, and I'll put this in writing, I'll try to refinance out of this within, 24 months. And he was okay with it because his thing is he just didn't want to have to deal with the upkeep or collecting rent. He was really just trying to retire. And that's another thing too. When you do a deal like that, going to the bank to refi is a little different than going to the bank for a purchase. Because now when I refi, I may not have to come up with, 20% or anything like that. Because I already own the property on paper. It's my property. He's just holding notes. So I'm essentially having them refinance a mortgage that he's given me.
That last 5 minutes was just powerful, man. Because, I mean, we talked about the cash flow quadrant. A lot of people aren't really familiar with that.
Mm-hmm.
Then we talked about just being creative. And we also talked about your most current deals. And I like to talk to people about their current deals because we can talk about mistakes, but you are refined now. Mm-hmm. So it's like, how are you doing things now? And we know that because that's more applicable to people going out there now. So that's pretty cool.
I try to hold on to my war chest as much as possible. Mm-hmm. But, so sometimes you can't. Sometimes you find a deal that you know you're buying it undervalued, so you have to drop some cash. And that's not a problem. But you can find ways to keep your cash. Like I used to think when I first got into business, you were hearing no money down, the whole Carlton Sheep thing. You would think that nobody does that. No, people will do this. And when you start to see it, and then when you do your first deal, it's like, it's almost like the euphoria of like winning a championship when you get a deal and you don't come out of your pocket. Like, I'll pay a couple dollars on closing costs. But other than that, I'm keeping all my cash.
It's tough to do that without getting off market deals. It's very, it's like you kind of make it one extra step more difficult by going to the MLS. Cause then it's like, they want cash. Yeah. Or they want a loan. They're not going to be negotiating because the realtor can't get money off of your negotiation. He can't get money if you take a note back or you get him to do whatever or take a discount because he's promised the seller that he's like, oh, yeah, you're going to get this much money for your property. And then they go.
The thing about off-market deals is there's tons of them. There's tons of deals to be made, specifically if we're talking about buying the hood. Right. So there's tons of deals to be made, but you have to be in the business. You can't, like I see a lot of times people say, I want to be in real estate. So they go out and their first deal falls apart and they're just like so distraught, they're just done. Like, so when's the last time you did anything? Well, I haven't because this happened. I probably had 3 times the amount of deals fall apart than deals that go through. But, it's like baseball, right? So if I bat 300, I'm going to the Hall of Fame. That means that you failed 7 times. I succeeded 3 times and I failed 7 times, but I'm a legend. Like, you know what I mean? So, listen, if I could get 3 out of 10, that's amazing. I may get 1 out of 10, but the fact of the matter
exactly. It's like low key, you only need one. You don't even need 3. You can get one and be set.
And that's another thing you recognize. To actually build wealth in real estate, you don't need 700 properties. You don't need you get a couple properties that you buy right, it'll change your life.
Yeah.
Your first rental check is probably the greatest feeling you've ever. When you get that first rental check and you realize, like, I didn't do anything. I own the property, but I don't, like, it's not, passive income is a lot better than active income.
Yeah. And the crazy part about it is, like, it doesn't really ever go away. It's like that first property that you own is probably still paying you to this day.
Absolutely.
Like you can't get rid of it. It's like it just keeps coming, like.
Absolutely. And people will always need somewhere to live. And that's the thing. People, we're in a business where if you look at other businesses, like, so you look at the music business where they sold CDs at a markup or records at a markup, and then iTunes comes out of nowhere. And I read today that iTunes over a 10-year period took up half of the music business. So half of the music sold is through iTunes. They kind of just revolutionized that whole business. Yeah. They really can't. I mean, in real estate, we don't have to worry about, like, you know, being Blockbuster, Netflix putting us out of business. People will always need somewhere to live. Like, they will always need somewhere to live. So to me, it's the greatest business. Yeah. You know, I love the stock market, but real estate to me is the greatest business because, like you said earlier, you don't have to be the brightest person. It's just about ownership.
Last question is, what does wealth mean to you?
Time. Wealth absolutely means time to me. You know, the old saying is like, yeah, I just know a lot of people who have a lot of money, and when it's time to go, they don't say, well, you know, I wish I had more. They say, I wish I had more time is what they want. But what money actually does is it helps you have more time, spend more time with your family, more time with your friends. So to me, wealth means time. So essentially when I'm building this quote unquote empire of mine, is to have my time to do what I want to do and not do, you know, some people do what they have to do, some people do what they want to do. So to be able to do what you want to do, and which is time.
He said it's the wake up whenever you want to wake up money.
Absolutely.
So this is your opportunity to plug anything that you have going on and also where they can find more about you.
Absolutely. So I'm on every social media site at JW The Blueprint. That's me on Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, Farmers Only. No, I'm joking. But at JW The Blueprint everywhere, buythehood.com. You can sign up for the newsletter there to stay up with us. We actually also have a podcast and a webcast on buythehood.com. We did a couple episodes. But, you know, my partner and I, we're actually out making things happen. But we actually have some more stuff in the cut that we're going to let loose within the next couple of weeks. So buythehood.com, sign up for the newsletter. You know, watch the webcast there, JW The Blueprint. And for anybody who likes sports, I actually own equity in a sports media company called War Room Sports. And we're actually on our 10th year of doing podcasts on that one as well.
Wow.
So that's War Room Sports. So, you know, I try to find ways to monetize even my hobbies.
Nice.
More dividend stocks.
Man, it's been a great interview. I wanted to keep it going because you have so much content, so much just a depth of knowledge. So that's why I kind of let this run longer than
it. No, it's all good. Listen, you be talking real estate. You talk real estate and business. This is. I told you, that's my life. I love it. Yeah.
Cool. So for anybody looking to get in touch with us in regards to the investment club, in regards to being a guest on this podcast or being a sponsor on the podcast, we get a lot of spins. And so we want to be able to expose your business. We want to be able to share what your product is, what you're promoting. We want to share your message through this podcast and through this medium. A lot of people don't have access to this. They're not offering up you to get on their podcast. And I'm actually not even going to charge you. So anybody who wants to be on this podcast, record a 30-second blip, email that to info@capitaltodd.com. I'll shoot it to our editor and we'll get you on the next podcast. This has been another great episode of the Millionaire Podcast. This is episode number 55. I have no idea what we're going to call this episode because there are so many bars, but we'll find one.
No doubt. I appreciate that, man. Thanks for the time. Yeah. Hey, and I'm going to send you one of those 30-second blips with the book, too.
Yeah, do that, man, for sure.
Definitely will.
So this is Charles Oglesby, also known as Todd Millionaire, episode number 55, signing off.